Now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
And here we go again on the John Gambling Show Friday edition. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed with us. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I couldn't be better. You know, you always talk about the snow and the fact that the sanitation department does such a good job. I think this week was extraordinary, the fact that they kept it in Central Park. It was just amazing.
And we kept most of it to the north. All kidding aside, the people upstate are really having it a real tough time, and our thoughts are with them. If there's anything the city can do, we'll obviously help. But they've had an enormous storm, and now they have another 3, 4, 5 feet, some forecasters say, coming in on top of what's there.
Yeah, you wonder why anybody would want to live there.
Well, you know, it's everybody wants to live someplace that's different, and some people like one kind of weather, some people like the others. You grew up there. It's actually beautiful upstate. There are some great places and some great schools and industry. But it does get more snow than we do, and it's mostly lake effect snow. It comes off the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I have a very good friend that lives in Watertown, New York, and I always wonder why she and her family, they've been there for years and years, and probably 25, 30 years, and they always send me photographs of gigantic snowplows and wood piles. And anyway, be that
well,
as
you know,
it may.
My mother lives in just outside of Boston, in the house I grew up in, and they have real snowstorms in the winter, and I've said to her a number of times, would you like to move someplace warmer where you can get out a little bit? And she said no, she likes the 4 different seasons. She doesn't shovel anymore, but she certainly goes out when it snows, likes to walk when the snow's coming down, is very pretty, and dresses warmly.
You might get some takers on that warmer weather if you're offering to move them. And on the serious side of things, this week with the frigid temperatures that we've had, we had at least one death attributed to it. On an 84-year-old woman in an apartment with no heat, we talked about this last time around, you know, landlords that don't pay attention, don't do anything. Every winter we hear the stories. I know that there are systems in place. I know there are people in place in your department, in City Hall. But, man, you have to wonder how these landlords can just not pay attention.
I have no idea why they don't. I can tell you, you call 311, we'll make sure that you get heat or get to a warming center. This year we opened 9 warming centers around the city. In last year we had 5. What we did last year is we just put 1 in each borough. This year we've got 2 in 4 boroughs and 1 in the 5th borough. And we've tried to be a little more intelligent about it. We looked at the 311 data of where people were calling in complaining about no heat, and we cited our shelters, I think, using that data, probably a little bit better. Interestingly, fewer people are coming in this year. Now, you know, it was warm for part of the December and even into January. We've had cold weather the last week or so, but it has gotten warmer each day. There's really only 1 or 2 days when it was bitterly cold. You had a real wind chill down to 0 or below. But there's still obviously some landlords, and some of it, John, isn't the landlord's fault. There's things break, and if they fix it, fine, and if they've taken normal maintenance precautions, I guess, you know, that's some things just happen. The real problem is the deadbeat landlords who know that their stuff is going to break, don't spend any money to upgrade it or to put it in repair or have it inspected, and then when it breaks, don't do anything. And those are the ones you want to go after.
Really, you want to go after and you want to hit them as hard as you possibly can. While we're talking about housing, Starrett City was sold this week for $1.3 billion. We've had a number of very large residential areas sold for big money lately. A lot of people are concerned that the middle class, the lower middle class, will be shut out of these things. These are, generally speaking, in a lot of cases, Mitchell-Lama programs. Are you concerned about that?
Well, Mitchell-Lama was a program where the builder built, got some tax breaks for it. The deal was after 30-odd years, the tax breaks would end, and it would become market rate. Unfortunately, 30 years sometimes shows up. A lot of the Mitchell-Lama developers have worked out deals with the tenants who aren't always incidentally opposed, because remember, a lot of these tenants would be able to buy their apartments cheaply and some want to flip them. Now, what we want to do is make sure that there's all housing for all economic levels throughout the city. But if you take a look at Stuyvesant Town, that's a very different deal than this one. Starrett City is much more problematic. When Stuyvesant Town was sold, it was a private seller selling to a private buyer. The seller had been a very good landlord over the years, good company, MetLife. The buyer, Spire, Jerry Spire, is a great landlord, and I think the tenants in Stuyvesant Town will be well protected. And, you know, rents will go up, but rents, everything goes up to some extent. But, you know, Stuyvesant has a good landlord, Starrett City is very different. Starrett City is something where the group buying it has a history of lots of violations. That's worrisome. The city has been supporting Starrett City by giving them roughly $15 million a year, but the real subsidies have come from the state and federal governments, and they're the ones that would have to approve this sale. There are some questions, and until you adjudicate all the facts, I don't know how true they are, and I don't want to impugn anybody's reputation or honesty, but there are questions about this landlord and some of the plans that they have to build other things there. It would need approvals from the state and city. Some land use is going to change, which means the city council has to get involved under the ULURP process. I think that would be very difficult to see how they could approve it. But, you know, they got to look at the facts, and we'll treat everybody fairly. But I think you have to look at Starrett City very differently than Stuyvesant.
Yeah, and there are just thousands of people live in these facilities. It's just amazing how large they are.
They're very big developments. And when they were built, people were happy that they were built. We want them to be part of the city and be well taken care of. You know, we like developers who want to build and build big. This city is growing. We're going to add more people than live in Pittsburgh in the first half a dozen years of this decade. And somebody's got to build for them. But you want responsible builders, and we'll see what happens with Starrett City. I don't want to prejudice anything, but it is problematic from what we know so far.
All right, very good. Mr. Mayor, hang on a second. Let me take my first break. We'll come right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at 77 WABC. That's what you've got dialed in on your radio, WABC. John Gambling here. Good morning, everybody. It is our Friday edition. That means we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us this morning, too. We were talking about housing and building big things. That's always the case around here. A couple of issues on things that are being built. What is with, have you talked with the governor or his office? What's with his sort of looking back at the Javits expansion project?
Yeah, Dan Doktoroff, our Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Reconstruction, has been working with the governor. I think the governor comes into office and he says, I'd just, you know, like to get up to speed and take a look and see what we're doing. We need the governor to be an active participant, and keep in mind that the Javits Center is a state authority, so the governor certainly has an interest and should have an interest correctly. I think when all is said and done, what everybody will conclude is that the compromise that we came up with to move forward may not be optimal, but is probably the only thing that you can do at this point in time.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, are you talking about the compromise about the actual size and design and expanse of it? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, had we built the stadium, that was really part of the Javits Center, and that would have expanded to the south with enormous convention space, which we need, but we're not doing that. So those kinds of conventions, we're just never going to get to this city. They'll go to Chicago and Vegas and London, places with big space. What we can do is we can take the existing building and go up and have more rooms. Now, some people say, oh, it's more expensive to move things in and out in a vertically designed rather than horizontally designed building. That's true, but you're talking about the limited amount of space in Midtown Manhattan. There's a question of, can you go north? There's a garage, a bus garage there. It would be great if we could move that garage. What we concluded, and I think the re-examining will come up with the same conclusion, is that it's just not practical. There's no other place to put it. We would owe the federal government an enormous amount of money, I think, because they subsidized it and we haven't used it long enough. The question who'd pay for the new garage. It would slow the project down by literally, maybe could be 6 to 8, 10 years, who knows. So when we get to look at it again, I think we're probably going to come out with pretty much the same thing, although maybe somebody's got a brilliant idea. Listen, you always want to listen to other ideas, but I think also at this point in time, we've got to go and build something. We're losing business. We've promised to people that we're going to have something done by X number of years. People book conventions years in advance, and the relooking at something is not inappropriate. I just want to make sure that it's done expeditiously, and Dan's working with the governor's office, and I think everybody's trying to just take a quick, fresh look, and we'll probably come out the same place.
You don't think that the forces that killed the stadium are involved in this relook?
No, I don't think so, simply because it doesn't compete directly with Madison Square Garden.
Okay, fair enough. Another building project, I understand there's a...
Coincidentally, neither did the stadium, but that's another issue.
World Trade Center, one of the insurance companies, is in financial trouble. They might default on $250 million?
Worrisome. You know, everybody that says, build the World Trade Center quickly, they don't understand just how complex this is, how many different moving parts. The insurance companies have been a part of the process. There's been a dispute between the primary developer, Larry Silverstein, who had the leases on the World Trade Center towers, and the insurance companies who had insured them but never signed contracts. They just had binders in place, and that was going to be done in the future. And, of course, nobody ever really thought seriously about the two towers getting hit by planes and coming down and taking 2,700 of our friends and relatives and coworkers' lives. You know, it was a terrible tragedy for America. But it wasn't anything that anybody really had thought about, I think. And dealing with the insurance companies, how much should they pay? Was this one event or two? That was always a bone of contention, been adjudicated through the courts, pretty much settled now. And then there's what insurance companies do is they syndicate the insurance among others so that no one company bears all the risks. It's standard procedure. Banks do the same thing with big loans. There does seem to be a problem with one insurance company. It is the American subsidiary of a British company. And you can see this being a battle in the courts as to, and it's really in the Delaware courts, as I remember. The issue is, does the London parent have the obligation to bail out the New York subsidiary, which holds the policy and owes Silverstein $200 million? And we've written a letter saying, yes, they do. But, we live in a litigious society, and we'll see what happens.
What does this do to the project? Does it just put it on hold?
No,
stop it?
I don't think so. I think things will continue. If you go down, I was down the other day at the World Trade Center site. You've never seen so many cranes in your life. The Freedom Tower is going up. There are actually steel beams being put up, and cement has been poured. At the other end of the site, the World Trade Center Memorial, they're starting to pour concrete there. The Eastern Bathtub, as it's called, the place where you've got to dig out a big new hole with a big wall around it for the foundations of the other towers that are going up to provide commercial space, that's going on. The Calatrava Port Terminal and the Fulton Street Terminal, all these projects downtown. It is a nightmare for traffic. It's going to be a nightmare for traffic. It's the only ways that we can build things expeditiously, and we're just going to have to, hold our breath and keep our sanity and tempers in check and say, look, this is for the future. It's not that big a deal to be inconvenienced given what we're going to get out of this, and we want to make sure we show the terrorists that they didn't win. And I think some of these doubters and naysayers, they want everything, but they don't want to do the work, and they're just going to have to do the work.
I read somewhere that there are 59, I think, separate projects in process in that one very small area.
It would not surprise me. And remember, that's just one part of downtown. You go over to the other side of Manhattan on the east side of downtown, new park starting, going all the way from the ferry all the way up under the bridges, and the Fulton Fish Market all getting redeveloped, and every place you go downtown. I was down there last night to give a speech and for a group, Common Ground, which is just a wonderful organization helping people build affordable housing. And it's on Wall Street. And in driving around there, I was fascinated the number of people with baby carriages out taking a stroll at 8:30 on a Thursday night.
Don't they know it's cold?
I remember with my kids, you bundle them up and they sniff a little bit, but it's good for us to get out.
Up and out. You're right, Mr. Mayor. Hey, hang on. We've made it to the half hour. Lucky us. That means we're going to update things. We'll be back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. Lots of budget issues going on. We'll get into those. But right now on the half hour, we get into the news with George. WABC. All right, you're with John Gambling Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at 77 WABC. We'll let you answer or ask the questions coming up here in just a little bit. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC if you'd like to get in the queue. Mr. Mayor, a couple of budgets. We talked about it last Friday briefly, the New York State budget, the governor explaining what he would like to do in the future. Also, the president, both of those budgets, at least in the first blush, look as though they might shortchange New York a little.
Well, keep in mind, in both cases, we want as much as we can get for our city. The president's budget has to cover an entire country. The governor's budget has to cover an entire state. So there's naturally going to be parts of the budget that New York City or any one part of the country or state does not agree with and will try to change in the legislature. In the end, John, budgets are proposed by the executive branch and approved by the legislative branch in both the federal and state systems. Congress now has changed hands from Republicans to Democrats, and the Democrats, we have a little more power because the state is more Democratic. We've seen lots of stories about how the representatives are two senators, both of whom are Democrats, Senators Schumer and Clinton, and our congressional delegation headed by Charlie Rangel, how they can bring home the bacon for New York, and we're going to be holding their feet to the fire. We want them to do that. That's why the public elected them. That's what they said they'd do if they got elected. Now they got the chance. I've said this 1,000 times, Schumer, Clinton, Rangel, et al., they've really worked very hard for this city. There's never been a time when I've asked for anything that they haven't been there fighting for us. But now they have the power, so, hopefully they will be able to do a better job, and the president's budget isn't all bad news for us. There are things that we want that are in there. Michael Chertoff called me the other day, he's the Secretary of Homeland Security, to assure me that in spite of the president cutting back some funds for Homeland Security and trying to do other things, New York City probably will do pretty well, so let's hope that's the case. But in any case, it's really up to Congress, because Congress is the one that says, let's spread the money around. Congress is the one that says, let's go and have monies to protect the corn crop, which is important to this country, but not likely to be a terrorist target. And our senators and congressmen have said, if we ever got in power, we're going to fix that. Well, okay, they are there, and let's hope they can do it. And I think at the state level, the local representatives in the Senate, in the House, and in the state Senate will have the opportunity to make sure that New York City is well taken care of when the budget finally gets passed. But every executive knows that they're not going to get all of their own ways, and they try to redirect things. And government is a business of coming to an agreement where you try to do as much good for as many people as you can without hurting the outliers too much. And it's a process, and there'll be a lot of articles and yelling and screaming and pushing and shoving, and that's democracy. It's not pretty sometimes. I've always been fascinated. The newspapers rile against late budgets as though that's something that's bad. I don't care when they pass the budget, as long as they pass a good budget. If it came 2 months later and we did a lot better, I'd certainly rather have that. But in any case, the state legislature and the federal legislature now have the opportunities to work with the executive branch of both the state and federal government and come up with something that's the best compromise.
In both of these budgets, there are attempts at reduction of Medicaid costs, health care costs, hospital costs, and the moment that those are proposed, you get those that are in the healthcare business screaming, you know, you're going to decimate our healthcare system. I don't see it that way. How about you?
You know, there's nobody that's not to blame. I don't know anybody that says, cut back the number of tests that you can give me because statistically they don't make sense from an economic point of view. I mean, that may be true that it costs more to give tests than the cost of treating people and letting them die, but I don't think that's a good comfort. That's the way to look at it.
That's the way the insurance companies look at it.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, you and I, we all want the best health care for ourselves and our families, and health care costs a lot. I'm going to give a talk in Washington on Monday on this very subject. I think we're directing our focus in the wrong ways, and if you want to hear the talk, it'll be on Monday. But
give us a couple of instances.
Well, you know, we do. Number one, I think it's a little bit unfair, not totally, but a little bit unfair to blame the workers in hospitals. 1199 is a union that everybody at the state level uses as, oh, they lobby the legislature and take care of their members, and that's what drives health care costs up. Yeah, they want to make sure their members are well paid, and that is part of the cost. But the cost of developing medicines and buying medicines is a big part of it. In our healthcare system, we have the best, you know, we train most of the doctors in this country here in New York, and we do the research here, and we come up with the great innovations and cures here, and all that costs money. So when you go and you say, well, there's a lot of waste, there is some. They would say there's a lot of fraud. There is some. But I don't know that either of those are the big part of it. We've chosen to go down a path in a kind of medical care that we provide and a kind of training that is expensive. And we use medicines rather than surgery in a ways we didn't before, but those medicines cost an awful lot of money. We've chosen to take care of our seniors. I don't know very many people that think that's a bad idea, but it clearly costs a lot of money. The average human being uses, or average American uses, an enormous percentage of their total lifetime health care in the last handful of years of their lives. And I don't know who wants to go up to these seniors and say, well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to pay you for good health anymore. Now, can we do it better? Yes, I think we can, and I think the governor's on the right track of trying to find ways to do it better. But I think that we all will, when we take a look at the numbers, say it isn't simple. In America, we spend an enormous amount on health care, and it's not clear that we get great results. And that's a structural thing that we've got to look at. It's something that the medical profession's going to have to deal with, and the public. No company seems to be able to afford the kind of health care that we all want, and most companies are cutting back. At the municipal level across the country, the municipal unions have been powerful enough to keep the benefits up, but the private sector has fundamentally, almost universally, changed. My company's one of the few. I asked the other day, we spend roughly $20,000 a year per person on health care around the world. And most companies just can't afford to do that. And so they've cut back. And whether municipalities can afford to do it is one of the things that the taxpayers and their elected officials are going to have to grapple with. On one hand, the unions that support the elected officials demand that you keep up the services. On the other hand, the taxpayers say, I don't want to pay. And the standard answer is, okay, we'll cut out waste and inefficiency. You know, if it was that simple, it would have been done a long time ago.
Yeah, I think the fact that, generally speaking, the system does not take care of preventative medical procedures, again, as you said, for actuarial reasons, is really a wrong direction,
well,
and I think that needs to be changed.
You know, that's why Tom Frieden is such a blessing for our city. He was the genius behind the no smoking. I may have taken the grief, but he's the one that made the case to me. You could save thousands of lives in New York City and tens of thousands across this country and millions around the world, and that's part of preventive medicine that you have to do. Trans fats, another one. I mean, at the beginning, nobody liked either one. Today, you know, the restaurants are changing and the packaged food manufacturers are changing, and we've banned smoking in a lot of places. In New York, not just New York City, but the state and the surrounding states. I was in Ireland the other day, and they don't smoke in any bar or restaurant in Ireland. Italy, they don't smoke in bars and restaurants in Italy. France just passed a law. Everybody is shocked. No smoking in office buildings starting this past January, and next January, restaurants and bars banning it. You know, if you work in I saw in New Jersey, the casino operators pushed through a law, or looks to me like they can have some area where you can smoke. I don't think people should be denied the right to smoke. If they want to smoke, that's fine. But why anybody would want to work in an area where other people are smoking, it kills you.
Yeah. Let me, before we have to get to our break and we get to our phones on the other side, 1-800-848-WABC, you are an observer and an acute observer of politics. What do you make of the fight between the governor and the head of the Senate and the head of the Assembly up in Albany?
I've got my own battles to wage, thank you.
You mean you're going to sidestep that, are you?
I think that's a fair way to describe it, yes.
Okay. You mentioned something in your, I believe it was Monday when you were in Albany, addressing all of the aforementioned or referred to, about the budget that was coming up, that you would like permission to instigate a New York City income tax.
We have a New York City income tax. I don't think that was part of it. I'm not sure what you're referring to. We have.
Okay. I thought I read that. Or maybe you wanted to. Do you need permission to increase the percentage?
No. We are trying to reduce taxes. We're asking the legislature, assuming we get the state aid that we need, and that the economy doesn't head south, or the stock market head south, or property transactions stop overnight. We'd like to, for at least 1 year. Well, for 3 years or so, continue the $400 rebate in property tax. We'd like to cut the overall property tax rate by 5%. We'd like to end sales tax on shoes and footwear and clothing at every price, which will help businesses in the city. There's a whole bunch of small business taxes, which we'd like to end. We've got to make this city business friendly because we need those jobs. We need the economic activity, and we think these things will do. So we're trying to...
Must have misread.
We're trying to reduce the taxes. Having said that, you know, if the stock market were to stop going up and it's done nothing but go up for the last 4 or 5 years and nothing ever goes up forever, you know, that's going to present a problem to us. If these big real estate transactions stop, that's going to present a problem to us. If people take their convention business elsewhere, that's going to be a problem to us. And so we want to be prudent. We've got to fund the health. We talked about health care benefits. This city has a roughly $50 billion unfunded liability for health care for our municipal workers for the future. The city has been responsible in terms of the pensions that our municipal workers get, and we've always funded our pension funds, but they've never funded the health care costs. And we owe our employees. They work there, and they had a contract, and we have to honor that contract and should honor that contract. But we are leaving the burden to our children, and so we've been trying to fund that so far. I've put in $2 billion, or we have, the taxpayers, it's their money. They put $2 billion towards the $50 billion. We're going to proposing to put another $500 million this year in. We know we're going to have deficits in the next couple of years, and I'm determined not to leave my successor with a burden. I want us to be fiscally prudent, and so our kids will have a good life, and we're rolling some money into protecting covering some of the deficits down the road. But we're certainly not raising taxes.
All right, very good. Let me take a break right here, make some money for my company, and then we'll get to some phones. 1-800-848-WABC. We're coming right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
WABC 57, WABC.
Couple of minutes left here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It's your opportunity to ask the questions of the mayor on 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, we'll start with Paul in the Bronx. Paul,
okay,
you've got...
John, before you pick him up,
sure.
It occurred to me, maybe what you were talking about in increasing taxes was the state budget wanted to increase how much they charge the city to process city income taxes from $40 million to $70 million, which I think it should be going down, and I've proposed we'll take it over. We can do it a heck of a lot cheaper.
That's exactly okay.
A lot of people file electronically now, and we don't have a commuter tax, so our charges should be going down, not up.
Okay, got you, Mr. Mayor. All right, Paul, you've got the ear of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Morning, Mr. Mayor and John. I got a question for you. How come people like Hevesy and other politicians get to keep their pension and health care when they get caught with their hands in the till? But if a cop makes a bad split-second decision or a fireman make a bad judgment call, they lose their pension and their medical.
Well, I don't know what the police and fire pensions do, whether they do lose it or not. I'd have to check. But you're certainly right on what elected officials do. I've always thought it was an outrage. But that's the pension bills. That's the law that the legislature passes. And people have been screaming about this for a long time, but I never see the legislature getting upset about it and changing it. But they certainly should. If you screw up a deliberate, it's one thing if you make a mistake. I've always been sympathetic and tried to defend our employees if they in good conscience make a mistake. But if what they do is they deliberately break the law, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them, and I think we should take away their pensions. Having said that, the likelihood of the legislature changing, Paul, is something between zero and less.
I'm afraid you're right. Let's go to line six. Eric's in Queens. Eric, what's your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg?
Hi, how are you? Listen, couple of years ago, I remember that maybe your first mayor or when you were running for mayor talked about getting the lifeguards from overseas. And I noticed last year the lifeguards were not very attentive at some of the city pools. And I want
Eric, thanks for the question. I don't want to show we got a time problem. Mr. Mayor?
I'll make sure I'll talk to the Parks Commissioner about attentiveness. You can rest assured we will be doing an event outside on the boardwalk on Coney Island promoting the fact that we would love to have people sign up to be lifeguards. We'll provide training. It's a good summer job. If we can get people from overseas as well, we'll do that. But Eric, we're going to make sure two things. One, we have enough lifeguards. Two, that they are well-trained and attentive. And one warning again, it's a little bit cold. We don't have to worry about it for a while. But, you know, just never go into a beach into the water without a lifeguard.
Mr. Mayor, we got to run. Our time is up as always. Talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Opinion. Passion. This is the most listened to news talk radio station in the nation.